SunTrust Business Lunch. John Hansen in for Steve Bertrand on this sunny but a little bit chilly Friday afternoon in Chicago. Thank you so much for joining us today. We got a lot to get to, including we're going to talk to the Chicago couple that turned laundry from chore into research and now a company that sells environmentally safe cleaning products with an ingredient list of everyday common items. We'll get to that in just a little bit, but first up, we've got Andrea Haines. She's the editor at Blue Sky Chicago and the editorial director at Red Eye. And Andrea, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, great to see you.
Okay, the list of stories that you have today is fascinating. I do want to start with this full-body, bird-like VR simulation thing that's at the Field Museum.
Yeah, so they did a demo at the Field Museum this week. They don't have it permanently at this time, but it looks like they're working on getting it. So this thing combines sort of a virtual reality, which we've kind of become familiar with on the headset, but this one actually lays you down, and you get to move your arms and flap your wings and fly like a bird while you're viewing cityscapes and literally feeling like you're flying through a city.
So you are putting something on your face that gives you that virtual reality, but then there's obviously some sort of detectors in with how much you're flapping your wings and what you're doing.
Exactly. And people, you know, I've just watched a number of videos about it, and like people, they're like, well, I was flapping my wings and then this happened. So like they I don't know if they realize what they're saying, but they've clearly kind of gotten into it if they are referring to their wings and where their wings are taking them.
That's fascinating stuff. And now they can fly over virtually San Francisco and New York. So not yet they can't fly over Willis Tower or do a turn up to the Hancock or anything like that.
Not yet. Hopefully they will do that, though. And, you know, I would imagine they'd want to add tons of locations so that you can feel like you're flying like a bird through all kinds of places.
I was kind of surprised that the simulator only cost $189,000. Not that I have that laying around, but
yes.
I don't know. That seems like something that a couple museums could afford to have.
Yeah, it's not for your basement, right? But it's for an institution to buy, and then they'll probably charge you $10 for a ride, and so you could see how that might eventually pay itself off.
It's for your bird cave downstairs.
Yeah.
Okay, robots and farmers working together. The idea of that is not necessarily new. There are robotics, obviously, in farming, all sorts of things, agricultural businesses, but this one coming out of the U of I is a little bit different.
Yeah, so this thing is actually checking on plants for farmers. So it's kind of doing the work of going around, literally checking the status of the plants and how they're doing. Are they potentially diseased? Do they need more water? All these kind of practical things.
It's kind of like the Mars rover, I guess, walking around. And it doesn't actually do any of the physical work of it, though. It's just collecting information.
It's collecting data, right? The magic word that shows up in every Blue Sky story, every technology story. It's all about the data. But yes, that's what it does. That's also not commercially available yet, but that could potentially sell for $2,000, $4,000. So
seems pretty affordable for farmers.
Yeah, I would imagine.
And I imagine that saves a lot. I mean, it's just the matter of time.
Yes,
walking around and logging out. But it's not one of those job-killing sort of things that people worry about, at least in as of right now.
Yeah.
Okay, and also I wanted to mention about that, the program that actually funds a lot of the research for this robot, people are a little worried that the funding might be cut.
Yes. So, you know, that's another thing that we keep hearing a lot about is like everyone's worried about money coming from everywhere and is it going to continue? So, yeah, there are others that are sort of like, will our project be funded?
They're not the only ones that might be facing the pinch. Okay, facing not a pinch but a squeeze. I love this story. I don't know why. It's Silicon Valley $400 Juicero juicer may be feeling the squeeze is the story. And walk us through this. This is it's not even really a juicer. It's a juice machine, right?
Yes. So this company invented these packets of produce, organic, you know, finely diced. It's kind of like I call it like a Capri Sun type of packet, if you can picture that, with the chopped up produce in it. So we all want our healthy juices. So what they're selling along with that is a very swank looking machine.
It looks like an iPad or something like that.
It's a shiny white, pretty, looks like it could have been made by Apple.
Right.
Which I'm sure is no accident. And this thing compresses, to use a fancy word, squeezes the packet, out comes this wonderful fresh juice.
So instead of actually putting fruit in it, like when I think juicer, I think fruit in it, it blends it up and
pulp
it comes out.
Pulp is flying all over your kitchen and then you've got this complicated machine to clean up. So far, we're kind of with you, right? Like it's clean, it's easy to use, it's neat. They've built in this technology aspect where you scan the packet.
Okay.
And it will then tell you, it manages your inventory. So it will say, oh, you're getting low on these. You know, if you want one every day, it's going to tell
you
you're running
it,
out, that type of thing. It will tell you if there's been a recall on a product that's in it. So let's say there's a recall on spinach and your smoothie, whatever packet contains spinach. So, you know, you could see a little bit of utility there, right? We're with you so far. Are you with me to $120 million?
No.
Because that's how much was invested in this company that basically provides and squeezes and manages your juice packets.
That's insane.
But so what happened this week was Bloomberg released a story wherein they had reporters squeeze this product with their hands, not with a fancy machine that is now $400 to put on your counter and take up your space, but they just had reporters with their reporter fingers like squeeze these things, and they found very similar results to what the machine provides. And the internet went crazy.
Right, because they'd say, why don't you just get the juice packs instead of the juice machine? Although you can't even do that, right? You have to have the juice machine to get these juice packs.
Yes. So now they're offering refunds if you bought the device. And it's kind of became one of those things that just became a moment. It kind of encapsulated everything that everybody thinks about startups and like how perhaps this got a little out of itself.
Right.
Or is like, and maybe adding technology to something to a degree that isn't necessary, et cetera.
Yeah, because, I mean, the juice machine is essentially a middleman at this point. I guess the comparison would be, let's imagine that your Keurig, which obviously cuts a hole in your little pot and it brings down the coffee and it heats up the water. Imagine if you could just squeeze the Keurig cup and make coffee.
Yes.
You would not need the machine
to
do it.
You don't need the machine necessarily.
So I imagine investors aren't too excited about that.
Yeah, it's definitely been a thing this week. And it also just created the sort of hilarity of it. And it's one of those things, it's not software or something that no one understands. This is a product everyone understands.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone's making memes about it and making jokes about it. And it kind of captured everyone's attention this
week.
And
it used to cost $700, which is crazy.
It was originally $700, which I guess you would say, if you're looking at something like a Vitamix, you go, well, people are spending $500 to get a Vitamix. That's how much they value making smoothies.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, we kept talking about it because we were like, how did they get to $120 million? So
right.
Blue Sky just, you know, we were batting it around this week. And you can see certain ways it gets there, but then at some point the brakes screech on and you have a Capri Sun package.
That you can squeeze with your hands. Andrea Haines, the editor of Blue Sky Chicago and editorial director at Red Eye. Where can people find all your work at?
So we're at blueskyinnovation.com. Red Eye you can find now on the Chicago Tribune homepage, which is great, under Eat, Drink, Do. All the things you need to know to plan your weekend.
Always great to see you, Andrea. We appreciate it. Seven twenty WGN. John Hanson in for Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch. You can follow me on Twitter if you choose to at JON the Cubs fan. Okay, you know it's Friday when Tom Gimbel comes in, the CEO of LaSalle Network. Happy Friday,
good
Tom.
To be with you. Happy Friday to you, Cub fan.
Yeah, always Cubs fan. Absolutely, and it's one of the few teams I have left to cheer for now. Unfortunately, no, Tom. We're talking about hiring the college class of 2017, which is crazy to think that kids that were born—I guess I can call them young adults—who were born in 1995 are now entering our workforce. But good for them.
Good for everybody, right? We need people coming in. We need people who are aggressive, motivated, that want to work, that believe that the best part of their career is in front of them, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that it's invigorating.
People that were born in 1995 have had internet their entire life, have had screens on their phones for most of their adult life, certainly, in their formative years. Does that affect at all the differences? Like, is there a big difference in interviewing a graduate of 2017 or recently versus someone you might have interviewed 15, 20 years ago?
So I graduated in 94. If I wanted to do research on a company when I was interviewing for out of college, I had to go to the library.
Right.
And so today, there's no excuse for somebody coming in for an interview, whether they're 22 or 32 or 52, not to have done research on the company, whether it's on the Facebook, whether it's sitting in the lobby of the office for 30 seconds before.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason that somebody shouldn't have Googled or LinkedIn who they're meeting, where they, what the company is. I mean, it's, you know, if a client or a company comes in and says, we're going to have you meet with somebody ad hoc, you're going to meet with John, LinkedIn, John.
Got to find it, yep.
2 seconds.
And so you can tell right away, maybe filter out someone that doesn't know, seem to know anything about what you do, as someone that clearly doesn't know the ropes or doesn't have that motivation to go through that process.
Preparation and instinct to move quickly. And for certain roles, you want somebody who's very analytical and takes their time in process, but the ability to say, I'm going to be meeting with somebody, I've got their name. Why would I not check them out as fast as I can to know?
And do you look up everybody that you're interviewing?
Well,
so I was going to say on the flip end of it,
for
as
sure.
A company, and I guess if anyone's out there listening that's applying for a gig, maybe you're the class of 2017, any quick advice for them to clean up their profiles or anything?
I think number one, realize that it's not what it was 10 years ago where people were saying, oh, if you have a picture holding a beer can, you're not going to get a job.
Right.
Everybody
right.
realizes life has changed.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to make sure that don't set your profiles open for everybody to see everything, right? It's a really basic thing. The second thing is, even if you're graduating from college, get a LinkedIn profile, right? Make sure it's accurate and don't just look at it from the edit screen. Go in and look at it as though you're just a viewer and see how it looks and make sure it's aesthetically pleasing.
And reads well, too. Okay, how do you as a company attract the best class of 2017?
So that's, you know, the buzz phrase right now is employer branding. And we have, obviously, LinkedIn, like we've talked about, but there's also Glassdoor, there's also Facebook, and you want to make sure that you've got, that you're coming up on searches of what it is. So whether you're in advertising or media or recruiting, that when somebody does, you're optimizing search engine. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So have those keywords. You got to invest some money on the marketing side. So when fresh grads or recent grads are looking up companies to work at, you come up in the list. But also look at what universities your current employee base came from. Right? And as an employer, you want to go and have postings at those schools. You may even want to go visit them, whether it's local schools, DePaul, Loyola, Northwestern, or going down to U of I, going to Madison, going to Des Moines, going to wherever.
Working through the networks that you already kind of have established within your company.
You've got great, most companies have at least a few good employees, right?
You hope so, right?
Leverage their alumni network at their own colleges.
All right, so what do people that are graduating in 2017 or just last year, what do they want out of a company? Is it different than what you see from someone maybe 10, 15 years older?
What they want is to know that management supports their growth and that management wants to be part of the community. I think those are, if I were to say there's a real big difference between now and a decade ago, it's that the company wants to be branded. People want to wear the, I think it's part of the dot-com generation where everyone was getting skin-tight t-shirts to walk around
right,
and had the
right,
logo with a pair
right.
of jeans. But people want to be proud of their companies, and they want to be able to have their backpack or their t-shirt and say, I work here, and this is what we do. Philanthropically, servicing the population, and also growth. People want to be excited. I work for a company that's growing, and they want to tell their friends. So to make sure that you're focusing on that, and don't overhire, right? I'm saying that as a recruiter, right? Don't overhire. Hire the right amount of people and then work them so they can achieve things. That's really important. Achievement is important.
It's fascinating that people are really proud of and who they work for is almost as much as who they are as their personal life. The lines between personal and business lives, I think, are really blurring for a lot of young millennials. And a lot of that is exhibited in the fact that young people like to carry their work home with them, work from home, work. I mean, I just think that fits into the kind of broader theme of how millennials work.
Absolutely. And especially in a city like Chicago, you've got a lot of 20-somethings moving to a major metropolitan area. They meet a lot of their network and friend base at work, right? So you want to attract people of, you want differences, but you also want similarities because these are people that are going to be friends and they're going to have social lives with their coworkers. And that's different than it was 30 years ago.
And I think people love to millennial bash, but you told me during the break, how many of your company?
We've got about 80% of our 200-ish employees are millennials. So
wow.
I'm a big believer. I think it's finding the right group of people.
Yep.
And then it's managing them the right way and giving real-time feedback.
Tom Kimball from LaSalle Network, thank you so much for joining us.
Good to be with you, John.
All right, more Wintrust Business Lunch coming up here on 720 WGN. Hey! 720 WGN, John Hansen in for Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Okay, I'm so excited to talk to this next couple, a Chicago couple, Kate Jacobus and Mike Meyer. You guys are the founders of Meliora Cleaning Products. And you guys have a fascinating background. Kate, you and I went to high school together, so it's so good to see you again. How did you guys start a cleaning products business?
Yeah, so it started all about 4 years ago. And we actually both have engineering backgrounds, so we've always loved making stuff, making products, developing products. And at the time, I was getting my master's degree in environmental engineering. And I was really learning about the impact of everyday products on ourselves and on our environment. For example, you know, you spill a cup of coffee or a barrel of oil, you know, what happens to that oil? Does it go into the water? Does it go into the air? And so it quickly becomes more than just a technical problem. And it makes you wonder, you know, how do you make sure that the products you use every day are safe? Safe for your family, safe for the environment, fish and all that good stuff. So I started making the products just because I was really concerned about what we were using
on a personal level.
Yeah, just personally, making sure that, you know, I wanted to avoid synthetic fragrances and some of the other ingredients of concern that are in conventional products. And it turned out that the stuff we made worked really well. And I tested it. Mike and I actually were at we played a football tournament, and we came home with just this bunch of sweaty clothes and mud and probably some blood in there. I don't know. But we kind of took a leap of faith and washed it just with the detergent that I had made, and it worked great. Everything was super clean. So we thought, maybe we have something here.
And that's what I think would surprise me, too, because I don't think, you know, I don't know much as much as you guys, obviously, about the chemicals that are out there and that are used in products. But I just think that I'm like, oh, who am I? I'm just some solitary man. How can I create something that these big companies, they must have some magic ingredients that make it all work. But in fact, it's those quote unquote magic ingredients that are the ones that are potentially harmful to a lot of different people and things.
Yeah, I mean, something as simple as preservatives, which we don't think about, people can be really sensitive to. And some of the conventional products or even some green products that use preservatives, just and they're important to preserve the product and avoid mold and things like that. But some of the preservatives that are used, you know, can trigger allergic reactions. And so trying to think about some of those ingredients that are used, those in particular, they're not helping get anything cleaner. So choosing a safer preservative or avoiding preservatives in total, like we do with our dry products, it's just a way to decrease some of the harm involved with some of these products.
What about from a cost perspective? Because I think that's something we always think of, is that, oh, if we either do it ourselves or, oh, it's going to be green, it's going to be environmentally friendly, there's going to be a price tag associated with it, and you're going to pay a premium.
Yeah, so one of the things we try to do is keep our stuff at a cost, at affordable price. Mm-hmm. We don't think it should cost more to clean better. So our stuff is comparable or a little bit below, like Tide, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what we try and do. We want to make it so we're using better ingredients. We only have a handful, so we can pass those savings kind of along to people using them at home, too.
That seems really surprising to me because, I mean, while you guys are now producing in the industrial corridor and have a space to do that, you're not producing on the massive scale you would see from some of these other companies, and that would seem to indicate to me that your prices would be higher. But even with your lower production than a bigger company like that, you're still able to keep it affordable.
Yeah. Yeah, we still have margins that makes it work, and mm-hmm. it works for us, and it works for people buying it at home, too. It's kind of one of the benefits of not having to manage 87 different things and make anything. It's pretty simple stuff. We make the soap ourselves, so we do a lot of the in-house stuff, too, so that helps us control it as well.
By the way, 312-981-7200, if anyone has a question, a text, or a phone call, I'd love to get your thoughts, because this is something that kind of opened my eyes when we talked a couple years ago when you guys had started out, was that, you know, so I go to the grocery store, I go to the supermarket, and a lot of the detergents I see now have pictures of the globe on them, or they have, you know, the green recycled, you know, thing. Obviously, that would indicate the package itself is recyclable, and I think that I'm doing something good, but in reality, I'm probably not.
Well, you know, there's always good options out there, and there's a big spectrum of, you know, what we'd call the big, bad conventional products and to better options, and you can always make a better decision. But we are really aware of what we call greenwashing in the industry, or somebody sort of misrepresenting a product that maybe isn't quite as green as their consumers or the people that are buying it think it is. And that's something that we're always concerned about. We're really focused on transparency. We talk a lot about what exact ingredients are in our products, and a lot of, you know, so-called green companies, they say, oh, don't worry, it's really green, but they won't disclose the actual ingredients used. So we think it's really important for people that are trying to make better decisions, people that are out researching, looking at lists of ingredients, we need to tell them exactly what they're buying. And so that's why we have a full transparency policy. We tell people exactly what's in the products.
I think that's a growing trend, not only obviously with cleaning products, but things that we eat, things that we would put near our kids and stuff along those lines. I think you guys have probably tapped into something that a lot of people are asking for.
Right. Yeah. People are curious. People just, you know, you start asking, okay, what's in the smoothie I'm getting? Or I want to know what I'm putting into my body. So, okay, then what's going to be on your skin all day long?
Right.
And what's in my home? What's my pets? So my children are crawling on the ground. You know, what are they getting into? So helping people understand that.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting fact. I mean, we wear these clothes all day long, and it isn't something I think a lot of people that are part of the green movement and want to be environmentally safe, cleaning products, that's nothing necessarily new to them, that they want to change that behavior. But for a lot of us, that's just maybe not the first thing I think of when I think I need to clean up my behavior.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like Mike mentioned, food is usually, you know, it's important. We're eating food all the time. And, you know, what we put on our skin is really important. But, you know, if you think about a household cleaner, you know, you're going to go clean the smudgies off your fridge. You know, that's something you're spraying. You know, you're breathing that in. So you have a lot of contact with these cleaning products every day. And people that work in the home, women especially, tend to have more allergens and allergic responses to things like fragrances. And it tends to be because they tend to be exposed to more of these products. So choosing simpler products that you're using in the home for kids, even for pets, that's really important. And it's something that we come in contact with every day.
First question we got on the text line from the 630, what is the name of the product? We said it at the top, but if someone's just tuning in, it's Meliora, right?
Correct. Yeah, Meliora Cleaning. And Meliora is actually a Latin word. So if you think of the English word ameliorate, it means to make better. So this is a little free Latin lesson for all your listeners today. But Meliora. And it literally, the translation is better. So we really wanted to name our company something that represented what we were going for. We wanted to offer a better product. We always want to be improving. We're always looking for ways to make our product itself and make our company better. And so that's why we chose the name Meliora.
So we're going to be cleaner. We're going to be safer for the environment, and we're going to be smarter because we're going to learn a little Latin. More with Kate and Mike after this here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Wintrust Business Lunch. Oh, and by the way, Steve Alexander, the tea place next door, that's all I know Argo as. I do go to Argo every now and then. I just roll over there and get something fruity from there. I didn't remember the
name. It has a name.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, I won't bring my cash starting on Monday. All right, we're joined by Kate Jacobus and Mike Meyer from Meliora talking about their cleaning products that are environmentally safe and just as good, they say, as some of the ones you'll buy in the big box store. And where is your facility located? Because at first, you guys were making this out of your apartment, right?
So yeah, we were a home-based business for the first couple of years that we got started, but we now have a dedicated factory facility combined with our office space, and we are in the industrial corridor. So we're at Damon and Carroll. 2041 West Carroll, actually, is where we're located.
How big of a jump was that? Was that really scary? As a young starting new company, or was it exciting, or was it kind of a mix of everything?
I would say it was definitely both. One of the great things was we no longer had to haul things up to four flights of stairs to our house, which was great, you know. So it made for things a little bit easier that way. It allowed us to like expand our line, get some new products, and like take control and kind of set things up to how we wanted to make it. You know, Kate's a black belt, so it was like making things efficiently and making so we can make it well and so we can keep the cost in line.
Well, I wonder also, and this isn't to discredit how you guys started, of course, but does it add a sense of legitimacy that you have an operation that isn't no longer in the home and also maybe keep you guys sane so you can have like this work-life balance sort of?
Absolutely. And one of the things, you know, we talked a little bit about transparency. We've always wanted to bring people into our facility and really show them, you know, not only tell them what's in the product by listing the ingredients, but show them how it's made. And so that's a little difficult to do when you're working out of your home. So having a dedicated facility, we have tours up there all the time, bring people through, show how we make the soap. And it's definitely nice to be in that kind of a facility. It's an industrial area. We can have big deliveries. We can send out big shipments. We've got a loading dock. We've got, you know, freight elevators and all that good stuff that you really need if you're going to be manufacturing a lot of product.
Meliora Cleaning Products. I just picture you guys with like a big witch's cauldron and just a giant spoon mixing up soap and stuff. I have no idea how it's made or what it looks like. And you're kind of going, Mike, a little bit. What? How is this stuff made?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not all that different from what you described. We don't use a big spoon. We do use an industrial immersion blender, though. So it's kind of the new version of the witch's cauldron. We do. It's a really simple chemical process. Coconut oil is actually our main raw ingredient for the soap. So we do. We blend that with sodium hydroxide, and that's how soap is made. So that's just a blending process that takes place. We pour it out, and we wait for it to solidify and harden, and it gets made into different products, some of our soap sticks and our laundry powder. So there's some grinding and things that go on. Most of our equipment right now is just commercial kitchen-type food service equipment in order to manufacture the product.
I have a soap stick right here that you brought me, and it does have the full ingredient list on it. And I guess I got to ask a simple question about transparency. Yes, of course, you love that your consumers know it. Is there any concern that someone will just copy exactly what you're doing and make it for themselves either at home or try and sell it?
If someone wants to make it at home, we actually have the recipe on our website. If they want to do it, go right ahead.
Really?
If really the thing is about trying to, you know, like Meliora means better, right? So it's having better products, having better options out there. So if you think that it's better for you to make it for yourself, go right ahead. If you've got the ability to do so, that's awesome. But if you don't have the time or the inclination or you don't have a witch's cauldron, we'll do it for you. So that's really the idea, is to give people the option.
And, you know, companies that are trying to copy recipes, they have access to really sophisticated laboratories. Just putting the ingredients on a package is not really giving other companies any more information than they could get for just a little bit more trouble. So, you know, to us, it's worth the trade-off to give a little bit more information up front than it is to try and hide that. And it's something, again, that other companies can figure out anyway. They've got very sophisticated analysis equipment that information can be obtained. So we'd rather just everyone have it in that case.
815, the area code wants to know, where are you at with testing of your product in the use of septic systems for rural communities? I know a lot of our listeners are in rural communities, and that is a concern for them.
Yeah, so actually, this is something we have on our frequently asked questions, because we get it a lot, for sure. And all of our ingredients are essentially safe for septic. It's all biodegradable ingredients, so no disinfectant should kill off the bacteria in the tank. What, just like any other recommendation for septic, don't dump the whole thing in there at once. Just use it as you're normally using it, and it should be fine.
Okay. I got to ask, because we haven't quite exactly listed the repertoire of stuff you guys have, the products. So you obviously have this soap stick that I have. What other sorts of cleaning products do you have?
Yeah, so we started with laundry powders. Those are still some of our best-selling products. It's different scents, so they're all synthetic, fragrance-free, but we do use some plant-based oils to create scents. So laundry powder. And the soap stick, as you said. And we do have an all-purpose cleaner. So it's a refillable glass bottle that we sell. And the consumer, you actually just add warm water yourself. And you make a very simple cleaner that cleans floors, walls, countertops. So all the hard surfaces in your home get taken care of by that all-purpose cleaner. You can refill the glass bottle. The laundry gets taken care of with our laundry powder, and then the kind of hard spots like the deodorant remnants and the oil spills from last night's dinner, that's taken care of by the soap stick.
It's Meliora Cleaning Products, Meliora, in case anyone didn't know it there. Kate and Mike, thank you guys so much for joining us.
Thanks, John.
Thanks for having us.
A blast. All right, we're going to wrap things up next on the Wintrust Business Lunch.